In the blasting ruin of death, the metal shell that circled the planet wrinkled and crumpled into an aching mock of its own grandeur. The survivors tore up the metal plating and sold it to other planets for seed and cattle. The soil was uncovered once more, and the planet returned to its beginnings. In the spreading areas of primitive agriculture, it forgot its intricate and colossal past, or would have, but for the still mighty shards that heaped their massive ruins toward the sky in bitter and dignified silence. Arcadia watched the metal rim of the horizon with a stirring of the heart. The village in which the Palvers lived was but a huddle of houses to her, small and primitive. The fields that surrounded it were golden yellow, wheat-clogged tracts. But there, just past the reaching point, was the memory of the past, still glowing in unrusted splendor, and burning with fire where the sun of Trantor caught it in gleaming highlights. She had been there once, during the months since she had arrived at Trantor. She had climbed onto the smooth, unjointed pavement, and ventured into the silent, dust-streaked structures, where the light entered through the jags of broken walls and partitions. It had been solidified heartache. It had been blasphemy. She had left, clangingly, running until her feet pounded softly on earth once more. And then she could only look back longingly. She dared not disturb that mighty brooding once more. Somewhere on this world, she knew, she had been born, near the old Imperial Library, which was the veriest Trantor of Trantor. It was the sacred of the sacred, the holy of holies. Of all the world, it alone had survived the great sack, and for a century it had remained complete and untouched, defiant of the universe. There, Harry Seldon and his group had woven their unimaginable web. There, Ebling Miz pierced the secret and sat numbed in his vast surprise until he was killed to prevent the secret from going further. There, at the Imperial Library, her grandparents had lived for 10 years until the mule died and they could return to the reborn foundation. There, at the Imperial Library, her own father returned with his bride to find the second foundation once again, but failed. There she had been born, and there her mother had died. She would have liked to visit the library, but Preem Palver shook his round head. "It's thousands of miles, Arcady, and there's so much to do here. Besides, it's not good to bother there. You know, it's a shrine." But Arcadia knew that he had no desire to visit the library, that it was a case of the mule's palace over again. There was this superstitious fear on the part of the pygmies of the present for the relics of the giants of the past. Yet it would have been horrible to feel a grudge against the funny little man for that. She had been on Trantor now for nearly 3 months, and in all that time, he and she, Papa and Mama, had been wonderful to her. And what was her return? Why, to involve them in the common ruin? Had she warned them that she was marked for destruction, perhaps? No, she let them assume the deadly role of protectors. Her conscience panged unbearably, yet what choice had she? She stepped reluctantly down the stairs to breakfast. The voices reached her. Preem Palver had tucked the napkin down his shirt collar with a twist of his plump neck, and had reached for his poached eggs with an uninhibited satisfaction. "I was down in the city yesterday, Mama," he said, wielding his fork and nearly drowning the words with a capacious mouthful. "And what is down in the city, Papa?" asked Mama indifferently, sitting down, looking sharply about the table, and rising again for the salt. "Ah, not so good. A ship came in from out Calgan way with newspapers from there. It's war there." "War? So? Well, let them break their heads if they have no more sense inside. Did your paycheck come yet?" "Papa, I'm telling you again. You warn old man Kosker this isn't the only cooperative in the world. It's bad enough they pay you what I'm ashamed to tell my friends, but at least on time they could be." "Time, schmime," said Papa irritably. "Don't make me silly talk at breakfast. It should choke me each bite in the throat." And he wreaked havoc among the buttered toast as he said it. He added somewhat more moderately, "The fighting is between Calgan and the Foundation, and for 2 months they've been at it." His hands lunged at one another in mock representation of a space fight. "Hmm? And what's doing?" "Bad for the Foundation." "Well, you saw Calgan, all soldiers. They were ready. The Foundation was not, and so, poof!" And suddenly Mama laid down her fork and hissed, "Fool! Huh? Dumbhead! Your big mouth is always moving and wagging." She was pointing quickly, and when Papa looked over his shoulder, there was Arcadia, frozen in the doorway. She said, "The Foundation is at war?" Papa looked helplessly at Mama, then nodded. "And they're losing?" Again the nod. Arcadia felt the unbearable catch in her throat and slowly approached the table. "Is it over?" she whispered.
"Over?" repeated Papa with false heartiness. "Who said it was over? In war, lots of things can happen. And
"Sit down, darling," said Mama soothingly. "No one should talk before breakfast. You're not in a healthy condition with no food in the stomach." But Arcadia ignored her. "Are the Kalganians on Terminus?" "No," said Papa seriously. "The news is from last week, and Terminus is still fighting. This is honest. I'm telling the truth. And the Foundation is still strong. Do you want me to get you the newspapers?"
"Yes."
She read them over what she could eat of her breakfast, and her eyes blurred as she read. Santani and Corell were gone, without a fight. A squadron of the Foundation's navy had been trapped in the sparsely sunned Ifni sector and wiped out to almost the last ship. And now the Foundation was back to the Four Kingdom Core, the original realm, which had been built up under Salvor Hardin, the first mayor. But still it fought, and still there might be a chance. And whatever happened, she must inform her father. She must somehow reach his ear. She must. But how? With a war in the way. She asked Papa after breakfast, "Are you going out on a new mission soon, Mr. Palver?" Papa was on the large chair on the front lawn, sunning himself. A fat cigar smoldered between his plump fingers, and he looked like a beatific pug dog.
"A mission?" he repeated lazily. "Who knows? It's a nice vacation, and my leave isn't up. Why talk about new missions? You're restless, Arcady?"
"Me? No, I like it here. You're very good to me, you and Mrs. Palver."
He waved his hand at her, brushing away her words. Arcadia said, "I was thinking about the war."
"But don't think about it. What can you do? If it's something you can't help, why hurt yourself over it?"
"But I was thinking that the Foundation has lost most of its farming worlds. They're probably rationing food there."
Papa looked uncomfortable.
"Don't worry, it'll be all right."
She scarcely listened. "I wish I could carry food to them, that's what. You know, after the mule died and the Foundation rebelled, Terminus was just about isolated for a time, and General Han Pritcher, who succeeded the mule for a while, was laying siege to it. Food was running awfully low, and my father says that his father told him that they had only dry amino acid concentrates that tasted terrible. Why, one egg cost 200 credits, and then they broke the siege just in time and food ships came through from Santani. Must have been an awful time. Probably it's happening all over now." There was a pause, and then Arcadia said,
"You know, I'll bet the Foundation would be willing to pay smugglers' prices for food now. Double and triple and more. Gee, if any cooperative, for instance, here on Trantor took over the job, they might lose some ships, but I'll bet they'd be war millionaires before it was over. The Foundation traders in the old days used to do that all the time. There'd be a war, so they'd sell whatever was needed bad and take their chances. Golly, they used to make as much as $2 million out of one trip. Profit! That was just out of what they could carry on one ship, too."
Papa stirred. His cigar had gone out, unnoticed.
"A deal for food, huh? But the Foundation is so far away."
"Oh, I know. I guess you couldn't do it from here. If you took a regular liner, you probably couldn't get closer than Messena or Smushik. And after that, you'd have to hire a small scout ship or something to slip you through the lines."
Papa's hand brushed at his hair as he calculated. 2 weeks later, arrangements for the mission were completed. Mama railed for most of the time. First, at the incurable obstinacy with which he courted suicide. Then, at the incredible obstinacy with which he refused to allow her to accompany him. Papa said,
"Mama, why do you act like an old lady? I can't take you. It's a man's work. What do you think a war is? Fun? Child's play? Then why do you go? Are you a man, you old fool, with a leg and a half an arm in the grave? Let some of the young ones go, not a fat, bald head like you."
"I'm not a bald head," retorted Papa with dignity. "I got yet lots of hair. And why should it not be me that gets the commission? Why a young fellow? Listen, this could mean millions."
She knew that, and she subsided.
Arcadia saw him once before he left. She said, "Are you going to Terminus?"
"Why not? You say yourself they need bread and rice and potatoes. Well, I'll make a deal with them, and they'll get it."
"Well, then, just one thing. If you're going to Terminus, would you see my father?" And Papa's face crinkled and seemed to melt into sympathy.
"Oh, and I have to wait for you to tell me. Sure, I'll see him. I'll tell him you're safe and everything's okay, and when the war is over, I'll bring you back."
"Thanks. I'll tell you how to find him. His name is Dr. Toran Darrow, and he lives in Stanmark. That's just outside Terminus City, and you can get a little commuting plane that goes there. We're at 55 Channel Drive.
Wait, and I'll write that down."
No. Arcadia's arm shot out. "You mustn't write anything down. You must remember and find him without anybody's help." Papa looked puzzled. Then he shrugged his shoulders.
"All right, then. It's 55 Channel Drive in Stanmark, outside Terminus City, and you commute there by plane. All right?"
"One other thing."
"Yes?"
"Would you tell him something from me?"
"Sure.
I want to whisper it to you." He leaned his plump cheek toward her, and a little whispered sound passed from one to the other. Papa's eyes were round.
"That's what you want me to say? But it doesn't make sense."
"He'll know what you mean. Just say I sent it, and that I said he would know what it means. And you say it exactly the way I told you, no different. You won't forget it?"
"How can I forget it? 5 little words. Look..."
No. She hopped up and down in the intensity of her feelings. "Don't repeat it. Don't ever repeat it to anyone. Forget all about it except to my father. Promise me." Papa shrugged again.
"I promise. All right."
"All right," she said, mournfully. And as he passed down the drive to where the air taxi waited to take him to the spaceport, she wondered if she had signed his death warrant. She wondered if she would ever see him again. She scarcely dared to walk into the house again to face the good, kind mama. Maybe when it was all over, she had better kill herself for what she had done to them. Chapter 19. End of War. Quariston, Battle of, fought on 9-17-377 FE, between the forces of the Foundation and those of Lord Stetton of Calgan. It was the last battle of consequence during the Interregnum. Encyclopedia Galactica. Joe Turbor, in his new role of war correspondent, found his bulk encased in a naval uniform, and rather liked it. He enjoyed being back on the air, and some of the fierce helplessness of the futile fight against the Second Foundation left him in the excitement of another sort of fight with substantial ships and ordinary men. To be sure, the Foundation's fight had not been remarkable for victories, but it was still possible to be philosophic about the matter. After 6 months, the hard core of the Foundation was untouched, and the hard core of the fleet was still in being. With the new addition since the start of the war, it was almost as strong numerically, and stronger technically, than before the defeat at Ifni. And meanwhile, planetary defenses were being strengthened, the armed forces better trained, administrative efficiency was having some of the water squeezed out of it, and much of the Kalganians' conquering fleet was being wallowed down through the necessity of occupying the conquered territory. At the moment, Turbor was with the Third Fleet in the outer reaches of the Anacreonian sector. In line with his policy of making this a little man's war, he was interviewing Fennel Lemore, engineer third class, volunteer.
Tell us a little about yourself, sailor, said Turbor. Ain't much to tell.
Lemore shuffled his feet and allowed a faint, bashful smile to cover his face, as though he could see all the millions that undoubtedly could see him at the moment.
I'm a Locrian. Got a job in an air car factory. Section head and good pay. I'm married. Got 2 kids, both girls. Say, I couldn't say hello to them, could I, in case they're listening? Go ahead, sailor. The video is all yours.
Gosh, thanks.
He burbled.
Hello, Miller. In case you're listening, I'm fine. Is Sonny all right? And Toma? I think of you all the time, and maybe I'll be back on furlough after we get back to port. I got your food parcel, but I'm sending it back. We get our regular mess, but they say the civilians are a little tight. I guess that's all.
I'll look her up the next time I'm on Locris, sailor, and make sure she's not short of food. Okay? The young man smiled broadly and nodded his head.
Thank you, Mr. Turbor. I'd appreciate that.
All right. Suppose you tell us, then. You're a volunteer, aren't you?
Sure am. If anyone picks a fight with me, I don't have to wait for anyone to drag me in. I joined up the day I heard about the Hobermallow.
That's a fine spirit. Have you seen much action? I notice you're wearing two battle stars. The sailor spat. Those weren't battles, they were chases. The Kalganians don't fight unless they have odds of 5-1 or better in their favor. Even then, they just edge in and try to cut us up ship by ship. A cousin of mine was at Ifni, and he was on a ship that got away, the old Ebling Miz. He says it was the same there. They had their main fleet against just a wing division of ours, and down to where we had only 5 ships left, they kept stalking instead of fighting. We got twice as many of their ships at that fight. Then you think we're going to win the war? Sure bet, now that we aren't retreating. Even if things got too bad, that's when I'd expect the Second Foundation to step in. We still got the Selden plan, and they know it, too.
Turboy's lips curled a bit.
You're counting on the Second Foundation, then? The answer came out with honest surprise.
Well, doesn't everyone?
Junior Officer Tipulum stepped into Turboy's room after the visicast. He shoved a cigarette at the correspondent and knocked his cap back to a perilous balance on the occiput.
We picked up a prisoner, he said.
Yes?
Little crazy fella. Claims to be a neutral. Diplomatic immunity, no less. I don't think they know what to do with him. His name's Palver, something like that. And he says he's from Trantor. Don't know what in space he's doing in a war zone.
But Turbor had swung to a sitting position on his bunk, and the nap he had been about to take was forgotten. He remembered quite well his last interview with Daryl, the day after war had been declared, and he was shoving off.
Preem Palver, he said. It was a statement.
Tipulum paused and let the smoke trickle out the sides of his mouth.
Yeah, he said. How in space did you know?
Never mind. Can I see him?
Space? I can't say. The old man has him in his own room for questioning. Everyone figures he's a spy.
You tell the old man that I know him, if he's who he claims he is. I'll take the responsibility.
Captain Dixell, on the flagship of the Third Fleet, watched unremittingly at the Grand Detector. No ship could avoid being a source of subatomic radiation, not even if it were lying an inert mass, and each focal point of such radiation was a little sparkle in the three-dimensional field. Each one of the Foundation ships were accounted for, and no sparkle was left over, now that the little spy who claimed to be a neutral had been picked up. For a while, that outside ship had created a stir in the captain's quarters. The tactics might have needed changing on short notice. As it was...
Are you sure you have it?
He asked.
Commander Sen nodded. I will take my squadron through hyperspace. Radius 10.00 parsecs. Theta... 268.52 degrees. Phi, 84.15 degrees. Return to origin at 13:30. Total absence, 11.83 hours.
Right. Now, we are going to count on pinpoint return as regards both space and time. Understand?
Yes, Captain.
He looked at his wristwatch.
My ships will be ready by 0140.
Good, said Captain Dixell.
The Kalganian squadron was not within detector range now, but they would be soon. There was independent information to that effect. Without Sen's squadron, the Foundation forces would be badly outnumbered. But the captain was quite confident. Quite confident. Preem Palver looked sadly about him, first at the tall, skinny admiral, then at the others, everyone in uniform, and now at this last one, big and stout, with his collar open and no tie, not like the rest, who said he wanted to speak to him. Joel Turbor was saying, I am perfectly aware, Admiral, of the serious possibilities involved here, but I tell you that if I can be allowed to speak to him for a few minutes, I may be able to settle the current uncertainty. Is there any reason why you can't question him before me?
Turbor pursed his lips and looked stubborn.
Admiral, he said, while I have been attached to your ships, the Third Fleet has received an excellent press. You may station men outside the door if you like, and you may return in 5 minutes. But meanwhile, humor me a bit, and your public relations will not suffer. Do you understand me?
He did. Then Turbor, in the isolation that followed, turned to Palver and said, Quickly, what is the name of the girl you abducted? And Palver could simply stare round-eyed and shake his head.
No nonsense, said Terbor. If you do not answer, you will be a spy, and spies are blasted without trial in wartime.
Arcadia Darrell, gasped Palver.
Well, all right then. Is she safe?
Palver nodded.
You had better be sure of that, or it won't be well for you.
She is in good health, perfectly safe, said Palver, palely.
The Admiral returned.
Well?
The man, sir, is not a spy. You may believe what he tells you. I vouch for him.
That's so.
The Admiral frowned.
Then he represents an agricultural cooperative on Trantor that wants to make a trade treaty with Terminus for a delivery of grains and potatoes.
Well, all right. But he can't leave now.
Why not?
Asked Palver quickly.
Because we're in the middle of a battle.
After it is over, assuming we're still alive, we'll take you to Terminus.
The Kalganian fleet that spanned through space detected the Foundation ships from an incredible distance and were themselves detected. Like little fireflies in each other's grand detectors, they closed in across the emptiness. And the Foundation's admiral frowned and said,
"This must be their main push. Look at the numbers."
Then, "They won't stand up before us, though. Not if Sen's detachment can be counted on."
Commander Sen had left hours before, at the first detection of the coming enemy. There was no way of altering the plan now. It worked or it didn't, but the admiral felt quite comfortable, as did the officers, as did the men. Again, watch the fireflies. Like a deadly ballet dance, in precise formations they sparked. The Foundation fleet edged slowly backwards. Hours passed, and the fleet veered slowly off, teasing the advancing enemy slightly off course, then more so. In the minds of the dictators of the battle plan, there was a certain volume of space that must be occupied by the Kalganian ships. Out from that volume crept the Foundationers. Into it slipped the Kalganians. Those that passed out again were attacked, suddenly and fiercely. Those that stayed within were not touched. It all depended on the reluctance of the ships of Lord Stettin to take the initiative themselves, on their willingness to remain where none attacked. Captain Dixell stared frigidly at his wristwatch. It was 13:10.
"We've got 20 minutes," he said.
The lieutenant at his side nodded tensely.
"Looks all right so far, Captain. We've got more than 90% of them boxed. If we can keep them that way..."
"Yes, if."
The Foundation ships were drifting forward again, very slowly. Not quick enough to urge a Kalganian retreat, and just quickly enough to discourage a Kalganian advance. They preferred to wait. And the minutes passed. At 13:25, the admiral's buzzer sounded in 75 ships of the Foundation's line, and they built up to a maximum acceleration towards the front plane of the Kalganian fleet, itself 300 strong. Kalganian shields flared into action, and the vast energy beams flicked out. Every one of the 300 concentrated in the same direction, towards their mad attackers who bored down relentlessly, uncaringly, and... At 13:30... 50 ships under Commander Sen appeared from nowhere, in one single bound through hyperspace to a calculated spot at a calculated time, and were spaced in tearing fury at the unprepared Kalganian rear. The trap worked perfectly. The Kalganians still had numbers on their side, but they were in no mood to count. Their first effort was to escape, and the formation once broken was only the more vulnerable, as the enemy ships bumbled into one another's path. After a while, it took on the proportions of a rat hunt. Of 300 Kalganian ships, the core and pride of their fleet, some 60 or less, many in a state of near hopeless disrepair, reached Kalgan once more. The Foundation loss was 8 ships out of a total of 125. Preem Palver landed on Terminus at the height of the celebration. He found the Fuhrer distracting, but before he left the planet, he had accomplished 2 things... and received 1 request. The 2 things accomplished were, 1, the conclusion of an agreement whereby Palver's cooperative was to deliver 20 shiploads of certain foodstuffs per month for the next year at a war price, without, thanks to the recent battle, a corresponding war risk, and 2, the transfer to Dr. Darrell of Arcadia's 5 short words. For a startled moment, Darrell had stared wide-eyed at him, and then he had to make his request. It was to carry an answer back to Arcadia. Palver liked it.
It was a simple answer and made sense. It was, "Come back now. There won't be any danger." Lord Stetton was in raging frustration. To watch his every weapon break in his hands, to feel the firm fabric of his military might part like the rotten thread it suddenly turned out to be, would have turned phlegmaticism itself into flowing lava. And yet he was helpless, and knew it. He hadn't really slept well in weeks. He hadn't shaved in 3 days. He had canceled all audiences. His admirals were left to themselves, and none knew better than the Lord of Calgan that very little time and no further defeats need elapse before he would have to contend with internal rebellion. Lev Mirus, First Minister, was no help. He stood there, calm and indecently old, with his thin, nervous fingers stroking, as always, the wrinkled line from nose to chin.
"Well," shouted Stetton at him, "contribute something! We stand here defeated, do you understand? Defeated! And why? I don't know why! There you have it. I don't know why! Do you know why?"
"I think so," said Mirus calmly. "Treason." The word came out softly, and other words followed as softly. "You've known of treason, and you've kept quiet. You served the fool I ejected from the First Citizenship, and you think you can serve whatever foul rat replaces me. If you have acted so, I will extract your entrails for it and burn them before your living eyes." Mirus was unmoved. "I have tried to fill you with my own doubts, not once, but many times. I have dinned it in your ears, and you have preferred the advice of others because it stuffed your ego better. Matters have turned out not as I feared, but even worse. If you do not care to listen now, say so, sir, and I shall leave, and in due course deal with your successor, whose first act, no doubt, will be to sign a treaty of peace." Stetton stared at him, red-eyed, enormous fists slowly clenching and unclenching. "Speak, you gray slug. Speak!" "I have told you often, sir, that you are not the mule. You may control ships and guns, but you cannot control the minds of your subjects. Are you aware, sir, of who it is you are fighting? You fight the Foundation, which is never defeated. The Foundation, which is protected by the Selden Plan. The Foundation, which is destined to form a new empire. There is no plan, no longer. Mun has said so." "Then Mun is wrong. And if he were right, what then? You and I, sir, are not the people. The men and women of Calgan and its subject worlds believe utterly and deeply in the Selden Plan, as do all the inhabitants of this end of the galaxy. Nearly 400 years of history teach the fact that the Foundation cannot be beaten. Neither the kingdoms, nor the warlords, nor the old galactic empire itself could do it."
"The mule did it."
"Exactly. And he was beyond calculation. And you are not. What is worse, the people know that you are not. So your ships go into battle fearing defeat in some unknown way. The insubstantial fabric of the plan hangs over them, so that they are cautious and look before they attack, and wonder a little too much. While on the other side, that same insubstantial fabric fills the enemy with confidence, removes fear, maintains morale in the face of early defeats. Why not? The Foundation has always been defeated at first, and has always won in the end. And your own morale, sir. You stand everywhere on enemy territory. Your own dominions have not been invaded, are still not in danger of invasion. Yet you are defeated. You don't believe in the possibility even of victory, because you know there is none. Stoop, then, or you will be beaten to your knees. Stoop voluntarily, and you may save a remnant. You have depended on metal and power, and they have sustained you as far as they could. You have ignored mind and morale, and they have failed you. Now take my advice. You have the Foundation man, Homir Mun. Release him. Send him back to Terminus, and he will carry your peace offers." Stetton's teeth ground behind his pale, set lips. But what choice had he? On the first day of the new year, Homir Mun left Calgan again. More than 6 months had passed since he had left Terminus, and in the interim, a war had raged and faded. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette.